Okay, great. It's September 18th, 2008, for the Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting, and it looks like everybody is in order. Nobody's out of that. Mr. Benedict, if you could call the roll.
Is Ms. Dean?
Here.
Mr. Herring?
Here.
Mr. Ashton?
Here.
Hello, Mr. Costello. Mr. Guthrie is here, not as the appointed member, but as a representative of the city of Rock Bend. Mr. Guerin?
I'm here.
Mr. Wallace?
Here.
And Mr. Talley is an alternate?
Here.
Everyone's here, Mr. Guerin?
Okay, thank you. All right, this is public comment. This is the time for anyone in the public to comment on anything that is not on the agenda. If you have something to say, please step up to the podium and say your piece. Seeing none, we'll close the public comment period. We have the meeting notes of July 17th, 2008. Hopefully each of you has had a chance to take a look at them. If you have any changes, please speak up. Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move that we adopt the minutes.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Any discussion at all? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, Mr. Benedict, I don't see Mr. Mellon in the audience, so how about the Lopez Recreation Status Report?
As you may recall, at the, I believe, the last meeting, since the County General Services Department, Division of Parks and Rec, has taken over the Lopez Recreation Area water and wastewater system, along with the park scene here in back of this. The committee recommended that we bring a report to you every 4 months. I did not get a report from Don this time, so we'll bring. What I thought we might do is make sure we got a report at the beginning and the end of the summertime, which is our busiest time frame. Don will give me a report at the next meeting, and I think if he's not able to come, I'll go ahead and just read that. But we don't have one right now, and we already have an alternate schedule right now for that. So we'll see how that works out with both parks and other information.
Okay, thank you. Any committee members have any issues or anything to add? We'll hear from Mr. Mellon or his stand-in next time, sounds like. All right, I think Mr. Benedict, you're up for the operations report.
Yes, just a few statistics about the operations of the plant. We, within the last couple of months, had quite a few we went through and did get resolved. I got quite a few things to go over on that. Let me go back a little bit further. Just basic statistics. We're about 70% still on the capacity of the lake. We're producing 5 million gallons per day. At the plant, we are receiving no state water right now. We're trying to balance out a couple of things that we're doing. We're not taking state water. We are anticipating starting next Monday beginning of the Paul Membrane Procurement Contract Performance Test. That's a six-week test that we will conduct, measuring all the data, primarily chemical usage and power usage, and compare those two usages to what the Paul Corporation bid on about, 4 years ago now, I guess. We will compare what we see versus what they bid on and try to resolve any overages or underages so the contract is fairly finalized out. So that will be happening, and we're going to attempt to not have any state water during that time and run the plant at pretty much a firm 6 million gallons per day. That will keep all the racks running as they basically were designed. To try to keep that stable, we can be able to compare the data that we have against the contract data a little bit easier. We think there's going to be no particular problems with that. We've talked to all the agencies about that, and the operators are on board with that. If that doesn't happen, if something breaks down to the extent that we can't produce the water just with the membrane equipment or with the operational equipment, we can get state water to supplement that. We're going to try to keep that very stable during the next 6 weeks, basically starting next Monday. We haven't had any particular problems with odor or taste. Plant's been running, other than the primary issue that I mentioned to you about the chlorine dioxide system being down, that was a lot of work for a lot of people to keep things going with chlorine. We did have a problem with our distribution system, and I asked Mr. Beaton to come up. In your packet, you will see an attachment, which is attachment 2-1 and 2-2. It's a notification that the Lopez system had coliform bacteria above the drinking water standard. Now, this was only in the distribution system, as far as we could tell, at one location primarily, that location being the Bellow Street turnout, which was not in operation during the whole time that we had this problem. I'll let Mr. Beaton give you a little more detail. There's no public notification that we had to make. We did notify the agencies, I guess that was last week, John, is that right?
At the TAC meeting,
2 weeks ago. And I'll let John finish up with that.
It was part of our routine monitoring of the Lopez distribution. Each week we collect bacteriological samples from all the turnouts. On the first week of August, one of those samples was found to have coliform bacteria. Coliform bacteria in and of itself is not a cause for great alarm, but we use it as an indicator that there could be some other problem there. So as per the regulations, we did follow-up testing. We collected an additional sample from the Grover Beach turnout where the first positive bacteria system. We looked at chlorine residuals, a disinfectant that we have in the water to make sure that the bacteria don't grow in the system. All indicators were good. We had some concerns that possibly the actual sample station on the Bellow turnout might be defective. We couldn't see anything wrong there, but repeated testing kept showing some positive bacteria at that one station and nowhere else in the system. We even collected samples from non-routine spots immediately adjacent to that turnout, and those were all negative. Ultimately what we did was totally isolated that short turnout section, drained it, put a strong disinfectant in there, sodium hypochlorite solution, allowed that to sit overnight, flushed it out, and replaced the sample station itself, put a whole new assembly in for the sample station, and did follow-up testing. All the testing from that point on was negative. We retested the distribution system multiple times. Never found any more bacteria in the entire distribution system. The regulations require us to look at the number of positive samples we found in the distribution system relative to all the samples that we collected. And there's a limit of 5% that when you exceed the number of coliform positive samples in distribution, that when it exceeds 5%, you fail to meet the standard. And the Department of Health Services asked us or directed us to notify each of the member agencies that we had this problem. They indicated that it was not necessary to notify the public. There was no concern that the public's drinking water was in jeopardy. But it was important, I think, to let each of the member agencies know that we had these positive bacteria. Since then, we continue to check this entire system every week. I've had no more positive bacteria, and don't anticipate getting any more. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Any questions for Mr. Beaton or Mr. Benedict, for that matter? Mr. Earing.
Yeah, I'd just like to know where the testing station is in relationship to that reservoir on Bellow Street. Is that going into the reservoir or coming out of the reservoir?
The turnout is just below the reservoir that's by the I think Judkins School, the old reservoir right there.
Yeah.
The main line runs down Bellow Street.
Yeah.
There's a turnout there where a number of valves and backflow preventers and meters and such. And then from there, it enters the Pismo distribution system. I don't know if it goes out to other homes and such there, or if it goes directly up to the tank. Tom Embry from Pismo Beach would be best able to answer that. During this the time that we were having the positives, that there were valves that were closed there that would not allow any water to go out into the Pismo distribution system. It's always blocked off, and we actually have multiple valves that were closed, so we were very confident the water wasn't going through and getting into Bismarck Station. I know Tom performed bacteriological testing in his system as well, and did not indicate that he had any positives there. So,
Mrs. Dean, anything?
Nothing.
Mr. Ashton?
How about Mr. Talley or Mr. Guthrie?
Actually, I was just wondering about the fact that you said we're not receiving any state water right now, and that seemed to have something to do with the basically the operation of the treatment plant. Could you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah. During the year, depending on if the plant goes down for some reason, we have problems, the usage requested by the various agencies, we balance out the water through the month, state water, and then we make up the difference with Lopez water. Depending on the cost, what the agencies, how much state water they want, the cost of state water versus Lopez water, quite a few variables. At this point, we're in a position where I believe several of the agencies have determined state water is more expensive than Lopez water, and I believe have asked to not to receive state water. The amount of water they get is going to be what they've requested ultimately through the month or the quarter, if you will. So from the perspective of us communicating with the various agencies and saying, hey, we've got this special test coming up for 6 weeks, we want to stabilize the plant through this test period. State water's been off, and we're trying to balance that out for the rest of the year. They've been okay with us going ahead just leaving the state water off, both financially and quantity purposes. Normally, we don't run the plant at 6 MGD. That's the design of the plant. In order to get 6 million gallons per day from that plant, at times, each of the individual 5 membrane processing racks have to provide more than 6 million gallons because they go offline throughout the day. So we don't like to push the equipment that hard all the time in their supplemental state water. But we balance it out back and forth depending on if state water's on, available, not. Lopez plant is down. We have problems with processing. Various different items, things like the festivals that happen. We try to store, get the tanks up higher. There's a series of operations that have us balance that out. This one is a particular issue because of the 6-week test that we want to do.
Okay, and then I guess the only other question I have is, do you anticipate, I mean, in other areas they're talking about a reduction in the delivery of state water. Is that something that is going to be an issue for us?
No, because we fortunately have, I don't want to say excess state water, the allocation of state water that we have at the reduced delivery rate, if you will, right now. I think the reduced delivery rate is, I want to say 25%, but I think it's around 30%.
35%.
The state said you get 35% of our allocation. Fortunately, our allocation is much more, our 100% is much more than anybody would ever use. So basically anything over, I believe, about 21% of the state water allocation, everybody gets the state water that they would use anyway. So we don't have any issues with that. But we are under that 35% reduction right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Guthrie, anything? Did that exchange raise any questions on anyone else's part? Okay, thank you, Mr. Benedict. It looks as though we are to Mr. Steve Tanaka.
I do have one more item,
oh, you do?
Which I would like to not bring up, but I will, because our financial person asked me for it, was in operations and maintenance. Between extra chemical usage and extra labor, we were about $800,000 over budget. We were under budget in our capital improvement project and some of the other operational categories. We completed the year, Jennifer advised me today, just about $1 million over budget on that operations and maintenance category. We're still within the budget projections that we had made because we didn't expend capital project money. And between now and 2 months from now, our staff will be meeting with the finance committee people and resolve how we can rectify that and what we do to balance that out. I anticipate that there will be no additional increases in billings. And I just will note that the main items that we probably will be able to deal with are, we have a $500,000 area fencing project that was not instituted. We're waiting on a grant still for that. We've applied for a grant. And we have two capital projects, the Rodriguez Bridge waterline replacement and the pigging project that we have not done. And that's why the budget was still balanced as we went through the year, and we're not over our projections. So with those considerations, and I believe last year there was a return to the agencies of about $650,000, which was done early last year from the previous year. So that will be balanced out and brought back to you sort of as an informational item of how the Finance Committee has worked out keeping the balance. Budget balanced and the buildings not increased.
Questions?
I'm tempted.
More to talk about later, I assume.
Yeah.
Yes.
And when, pardon me, I didn't get when this will come back to us.
It will come back at the next meeting in November, and our staff will be talking to the finance people probably within the next month to figure out how to resolve that.
Okay, thank you.
I can't resist.
Go ahead, Mr. Wallace.
Dean, on the operations budget, what's our total operations budget for a year?
I think it's about $2 million. Now, operations categorically, is it chemicals? I can't separate. I don't know the exact number, John.
From the figure you're talking about that Jennifer's going to share with us, so it sounds like that we're 50% over our operations budget?
Of the operations budget, we probably were, yes.
$1 million over?
Yeah.
Well, I guess we can discuss that next time.
I think we were, I can't remember the number. I was looking at it in the budget book, but I don't have it. Our total budget's about $5.4 million for last year, I believe.
Yeah. Thanks.
Any other questions for Mr. Benedict's on that issue? So that'll come back next meeting.
Yes, it will.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Tanaka, are you ready?
Yes.
Mr. Steve Tanaka of Wallace Group is going to give us a presentation on recycling feasibility study. It's a study, I guess, Mr. Wallace. Perhaps you can explain it.
This is a study on recycled water that the Sanitation District was able to get a grant for back in 2001. The issue of recycled water or reclaimed water, I'll introduce Steve Tanaka, division head for us at Water Resources Division Head.
Great, thank you. Good evening, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here tonight. What I'm going to be doing tonight is just giving you an overview of, as John had mentioned, of the study that we had done back in 2001, where we focused on recycled water opportunities here in the South County area. This project was completed in 2001. We did receive state grant monies through the recycling program. I believe that was 50 cents on the dollar, if I remember correctly, for the study. So we did get some grant monies to complete that work through the state. When we did the study back in 2001, in retrospect, I mean, recycled water has always been critical and important to us as we look forward to augmenting our water supply and our portfolio. But as you look at where we're at today, it's certainly increasingly important as we move forward. I think everybody here on the Central Coast is having water supply issues as we move forward. And as a result, we're also taking a look at other opportunities to augment water supply. As some of you know, we're currently working on a desalination study for the South County agencies as well. That's in the final draft stages at this point. We expect to finalize that report sometime here, probably around the first of the year. So what were our objectives for this particular study for the recycled water? Well, of course, we wanted to take a look at the viability of various means of recycling water here in the community, primarily looking at opportunities for turf irrigation, which, of course, is one of the most common, where you would have high contact for, say, like golf courses or recreational ball fields and things of that nature, or other turf opportunities that don't require as high of a level of treatment, such as cemeteries or Caltrans median strips and things of that nature. But we took a look at all the different wastewater components of the agencies to see how much wastewater do we have to reclaim and recycle. Then we took a look at what are the water supply characteristics of that recycled water once we would deliver it to potential customers. what's the viability of providing that level of quality of water for reuse in the area. And, of course, you also need to take a look at what are really the market demands for recycled water. Is there a widespread use for such a project? And, of course, you know, the larger scale of project you can implement, of course, the more attractive it is from a financial standpoint to implement projects. You know, you look at a much smaller scale project and that unit price and the cost of implementing projects a lot of times becomes unattractive. We looked at some of the regulatory requirements at that time relative to who is now the California Department of Public Health regulations, who set criteria through Title 22 for recycled water. What do we need to do to treat it to the various levels to achieve that quality of water? And what do we need to do to the wastewater treatment plant to achieve those goals as well? And then what's it going to cost? So those were really the goals that we set out as part of this study. So as I mentioned, again, we focused on things such as secondary and tertiary landscape components. Of course, the tertiary components being those facilities that would have high potential we may have with recycled water here in the area. And also looked at one of the options for stream augmentation. As you know, through Lopez Dam, I forget the actual amount, John, the amount of water that you have to release to sustain for about 4 CFS, is that correct?
No, 4 million.
4 million, okay. Yeah, gallons per day?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, thank you. And so we looked at possibly augmenting that stream flow also with recycled water. Of course, you've got a lot of, you have to take a look at the water quality objectives of the regional board, the basin plan objectives, and what your effluent water quality is, and how might that impact the beneficial uses of the stream, the water body that you're discharging to. And then we also looked at an industrial use component, Tosco Refinery, who is now, I'm sorry, John.
ConocoPhillips.
It's a Conoco, okay. And at the time it was Tosco when we had done the study, but they use a significant amount of water for cooling purposes. And so we also looked at an opportunity to convey water to the refinery for cooling purposes as well. So we looked at what are the wastewater contributions here at the plant. Of course, the South County plant, as it's operating today, back then it was discharging about 2.8 million gallons per day, and we understand that's still about what the current wastewater flows are at the wastewater plant. City of Pismo Beach at the time was about 1.2 million gallons per day. And one of the other things that we also needed to consider as part of the study is what's happening with the outfall. And, of course, the outfall is a joint outfall with the City of Pismo Beach and South County Sand Districts. And so we needed to also take a careful look at what would happen if we were to take water, recycled water, back into the community, how would that impact the outfall. This is just a quick overview of the service area that we looked at as part of our study. And, of course, Arroyo Grande up here and Oceano and Grover. And the little green spots there, as you can see, are areas of landscape, potential landscape irrigation. So those are the larger parks, ball fields, and the community. And when you look at the total area and the total picture, although there's a couple of fairly large areas there that could use recycled water, you know, in the grand scheme of things, there's you know, fairly small amount of potential for landscape irrigation. We took a look at the water supply. Of course, understanding what the water supply and the water quality is in the area dictates, you know, what your quality is through the end of the plant. But we took a look really at what all the various water supply components were in the study as we move forward then in looking at how to analyze the wastewater end at the treatment plant. As I had mentioned earlier, we did take a look at the Tri-Mesa area relative to groundwater use, and really about two-thirds of the water demand on the basin here is agricultural related. So, and historical trends based on the DWR data report that we referenced is showing that ag use over time from back in the 70s has diminished somewhat, but it's probably going to level off here. And that's what this particular report here shows. And aside from all the numbers up here, essentially the bottom line is that back The water quality at the wastewater plant, we need to focus on some of the things in particular, like the TDS quality of your water. And even without knowing what, without doing the testing on your effluent quality, if you know what your influent quality is, you'll have a pretty good idea what your effluent quality is going to be in a wastewater plant.
Can you go back to that previous slide to what the cost is?
I think it's important to note that Lopez cost in 2001 was about $500, but of course it's double that and more at this point in time, depending upon where you are on the pipeline.
So when you talk groundwater extraction there, you're actually talking about pumping out of your own wells there.
Yeah, and it's primarily the cost of energy to pump an acre foot of water. That's
it should be higher now, shouldn't it, with the cost of energy going up?
Yeah, again, these were 2001 costs.
That's still about the same.
Yeah, it is somewhat higher, but a little bit. But yeah, these were based on 2001 numbers.
Is there any way we could shut off that one bank of lights over there?
Okay, great. And so as I was saying earlier, one of the things that you take a look at on a recycled water study is, of course, first of all, your source water quality. And absent of doing a lot of extensive testing on your wastewater plant effluent, you can get a pretty good idea of what kind of recycled water quality you're going to have. And if you look, generally what I look at first when I look at water quality data is the total dissolved solids concentrations. These are the various concentrations of the various water supplies here in the community. And, if you combine for South County area, you're probably looking at 500 to 550 parts TDS, something like that, as part of your water supply component. And if you add about 350 parts per million of TDS to that, you can get a pretty good idea of what you're going to get in your effluent water quality. And a lot of times it's... that TDS concentration is one of your first indicators of how good your water may be relative to reuse potential, particularly landscape or ag irrigation applications. This chart here, this shows you a kind of a breakdown of the various components or parameters in a water supply or a recycled water supply, I should say, as to its degree of restriction on use. And as it turns out, if you look at this column here, which is the effluent quality of the district's wastewater plant currently, we're seeing about 1,000 parts per million TDS in effluent quality and chlorides of about 240 to 350. Well, what does that really tell us? Well, it tells us we're really kind of in this range, which means that the water quality is marginal at best, and it also it's going to depend on the sensitivity of certain crops. And, of course, things like turf irrigation during the hot summer months, you could start stressing your grasses, especially, tightly cropped golf course greens are generally the most sensitive to salty water such as this. And then certain crops, of course, like avocados and citrus are also sensitive to salts, particularly chlorides. So these are some of the locations you're going to be irrigating your turf at night. That's when your highest demand is going to be, but that's also when you have the lowest production of recycled water. These factors drive how much storage you need to implement a wastewater recycling project. Again, as I mentioned, we took a quick look, obviously, at the regulatory requirements. This is really the heart of the matter of what are we required to do to comply with state health requirements relative to tertiary treatment for a recycled water application. As you know, it's Title 22, and we looked at requirements to meet the 2.2, what we call 2.2 MPN, most probable number, bacteriological quality for the wastewater, which requires filtration, disinfection, and contact time, essentially. And then we also took a look at some of the groundwater recharge guidelines, which, by the way, have never really been adopted, but they continue to update draft guidelines here. And I believe a recent draft has just been issued as of, 2007 from California Department of Health Services. Relative to some of the alternatives that we looked at, this map, what this shows you here Here's Arroyo Grande Creek. So this is an area that we're looking at for a potential stream augmentation project. We did note that there's an abandoned 8-inch Tosco pipeline that we looked at the viability of, one, using it to convey recycled water to the refinery, but we also looked at it as another option to possibly purchase or acquire that pipeline and use it to convey recycled water to the Napomo area to some of the golf courses. So we took a look at both of those options as we looked at the various alternatives and sub-alternatives for recycled water. This has a lot of numbers on it, but the point I want to make about this slide here is that when you look at the market demands for recycled water in the area, we're looking at an annual demand. If you look at what we define for turf irrigation, it's about 145 acre feet per year, which is not a lot. But that's what we identified for landscape irrigation in the South County area. Of course, if you look at Napomo, there was a lot bigger target to hit with a lot of the big golf courses in the area. And that's why we also kind of looked outside the boundaries of the South County area to larger areas of reuse. And then, of course, as you look at some of these other numbers, say for groundwater recharge, for example, direct agricultural irrigation, these are much larger components of demand for a recycled water system. And as we take a look at the cost, when we get towards the end, you'll see that as you look at some of these larger projects, you get a better unit price for your recycled water alternatives. So what were we required to do for the treatment plant? As I mentioned, as far as meeting Title 22 requirements, we worked in conjunction with Kennedy Jenks to come up with a footprint and a layout for a tertiary plant that would comply with Title 22 requirements, which required some coagulation, filtration, and disinfection, and then contact time, of course, with chlorine prior to reuse. Yeah. And this slide here, the reason I'm showing this is because we, as I mentioned earlier, we are also doing a desalination study at this time. The South County Sand District is also master planning and identifying what they need for their future wastewater needs at the treatment plant. And so, as you can imagine, as we're looking at all these different projects, we may have some competing interests. This is a little footprint here of the tertiary plant that we laid out in 2001. You can see here we had a little RO component on it as well at that time, because we were looking, in order to take effluent to Tosco, was going to require some desalting to get a better quality. They needed higher quality water than some of the other applications. And then currently we're doing a desal project. Well, guess what? This is the same place. You can take recycled water implement a sizable project. We can reduce the amount of outflow through that outfall. That increases our ability to utilize that outfall for brine disposal. And brine storage was one of the biggest components of our desal project as we went through our study. And of course, the district, with their wastewater needs, need to plan for the future. And as I had shown in that prior graphic, they've got a number of facilities that they also need to plan for and already have slated on the project. And whether it's the desal project or a recycling project, there's a number of obstacles and things that need to be dealt with at the plant site itself as far as yard piping. In particular, the probably the largest one would be the City Pismo Beach's effluent line that would need to be relocated as part of a project such as a plant, whether it be a tertiary plant or a desal plant. I'm not going to go through all the details of all the alternatives and sub-alternatives that we did, but just kind of give you an overview of the basis of the financial study that we did as part of this recycling project. Of course, we looked at a 20-year life cycle cost and a 5% inflation factor. To give you an idea of where we're at relative to from 2001 to today's costs, the Engineering News Record Index, which is a commonly used cost index in engineering projects, was 6272 back in February of 2001 when we completed the study, and today is 8557. That's a difference of about 35%. So that's kind of what you might expect when I show you the numbers on the costs of the project, what you might expect today. And these, again, these are 2001 costs, and the cost per acre feet per year that I calculated was based, again, on a 20-year life cycle cost. But as you can see, when we look at just turf irrigation in the area, of that some 140, 150 acres in the South County area, we were looking in 2001 dollars of about $8,000 an acre foot. Compare that to what state water cost back in 01 was, what, $1,000 per acre foot or thereabouts. So it was still coming up pretty costly when we looked at that. And then we looked at saying, well, let's take turf irrigation and let's take it not only to the South County area, but let's also go to Napomo and serve all the golf courses. Well, the big difference in cost here is the big pipeline to get it out to Napomo, of course. But when you look at how much area you could serve, it really drove down the unit price. But this kind of gives you the range and the feel for some of the various options that we looked at, including stream augmentation here or delivering it to the refinery. So kind of gives you an idea of some of the magnitude of cost that we were looking at on the project. And just on a side note, too, and I'm going to close here and then open up for further comments and questions. As part of the desal study that we're doing right now, we're seeing a unit cost today for desalinated water at about $3,300 an acre foot, today's dollars. So $3,300 to $3,400 an acre foot. So, and with that, I'll open it up to any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Questions? Mr. Aaron, I'm sure you have a question.
Sure. I was going to wait for somebody else to ask you a question.
Well,
I'll start out.
Where the Pismo line comes from the airport area through that area there.
Right about here.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a relatively minor relocation that was looked at that time. I mean.
Well, it's a pretty large line. I can't remember what it is, a 15-inch line or so, but it would need some relocation around whatever footprint was there.
Yeah, and it doesn't stop flowing, so it's it's a pretty substantial undertaking, certainly.
Okay.
Yes?
You see there's a roughly between Pismo and our plant over here, we're producing about 5 million gallons. Is that 5 million gallons a day, daily?
Right, combined.
That's being sent out. Right. And your plant, to convert that over, is basically what you call a tertiary plant there, but you say the cost on the day's dollars is close to what, $8,500 an acre foot, is that correct?
Right, and that was annualizing the capital costs and the operation and maintenance costs as well, and then projecting that out.
My question is, if you go down to say San Diego County, much bigger county, and Orange County, and now Los Angeles counties, the two former ones are currently using this water in big time, and Los Angeles now considering it. Uh-huh. Why are they going in the avenue? Is because of their size and that, and production makes it a lot
certainly
cheaper than for our small county to get involved in it?
That's one of the obstacles and challenges that we have here is if you go to San Diego or say Los Angeles County, they have a number of large-scale recycling projects that are very successful. And their unit costs are probably somewhere on the order of probably less than $2,000 an acre foot. I've got some data. I pulled some data from a website. I'm drawing a blank on the exact numbers, but they're considerably more desirable than we would see here due to the economy of scale. Another good example, though, would be kind of close to home here is Monterey Regional. That wastewater plant pretty much uses every drop of their wastewater, and they do use it for direct crop irrigation, food crops. And
also along that line, I remember at one of our RAC meetings, we have a interchange of what different agencies within the RAC zone are doing as far as water needs and that. And it seems to me that the CMC up there, didn't they develop one of these where they're using their wastewater for other means, principally for the prison, and they also were willing to sell it to local customers like Cuesta and some of the other deals. I think they went ahead and converted their affluent water or whatever it is.
You know, I'm not really sure. I know they've got a pretty new wastewater plant out there. I'm not sure to what extent they're recycling.
My understanding, they spent quite a bit of money. I don't have the figures with me at the time, and they are putting that water to use, I believe, out there because they don't want to be a burden on the surrounding areas there. So I'd like to know what that's costing them, or maybe the state doesn't look at figures like that. They look at the overall fact that they don't want to burden their neighbors and that, but they are selling, I think, or offering the use of that water to, I know, Quest and a number of the people around there.
Yeah.
So it's a secret. If you go out and get more customers, you'll bring the cost down.
Exactly.
Steve, have you seen the Corolla 2007, I guess, or 6, something like that?
Okay. I actually have not looked at the report.
Okay.
When was that done?
I think it was done in 2005 or 6.
I think it was 5.
Yeah.
Okay. But we can compare some numbers there. Yeah. Again, I think the primary factor that drives the cost is the transportation cost, for one, and then the quantity of the water. So the further you have to go with the pipeline, of course, the higher the annualized cost. We were looking at some of the pipelines that Tosco owned, and we tried to negotiate with them to acquire some rights in those pipelines. And it was a prolonged affair, and, of course, they don't own the pipelines, I don't believe, any longer. But that's still a potential that could go out to the Mesa, but that's not helping this particular area here. It would help from the standpoint of reusing the water that might be utilized out of the whole groundwater basin, because Tosco or ConocoPhillips does pump quite a bit of water out there. But there was a quality issue with the water, too, that would have to require high-level treatment for them to use it in their boiler feed water.
The cost of the facilities at our plant would not be all that much, but the piping or transportation cost to get from one end of our city to the other in order to pick up all the parks and all that kind of stuff, where you had an ample area to be able to discharge that water. And so, of course, that did not include storage. You know, what are you going to, I mean, you can't use it immediately, so you got to store it somewhere.
Right. Well, we actually did anticipate storage, and that's what these little circles are right here.
Mm-hmm.
So we did anticipate storage at the treatment plant itself to regulate the demand as part of the project. So, guys, go ahead.
You were showing, I think you mentioned somewhere there where you were talking about having a tertiary plant there, and then you say now we're interested in desal plant in the same location, so you got a competing mm-hmm. projects going there. It seemed like I remember the other night when the sanitation group was presenting their little program there that they just acquired, or they're in the process of acquiring some additional land below there. Would that open up more land to have possibly both operations?
It does in some ways. As you go off the screen to the right, there's a triangular piece there that we are just about to close the final escrow with the county on that. And that adds another acre and a half, and there's a 30-foot strip where you see the landscaping between the airport and the driveway coming in. That's also included to bring it up to a total of about 2 acres. So it would be possible to look at that little triangular piece to the south. One of the primary reasons that we acquired that is for biosolid storage during wet weather, and we've used that consistently since 1984 for that purpose. However, depending upon future plans for processing, perhaps some of that could be located in that area. Also, you know, the storage may not have to be on this site. You could pump the storage to another location where the storage could be made. So there's different alternatives, and this was a 2001 shot. Obviously, it should be updated at some point here, depending upon the interest by the various agencies, to look further into current costs.
We are currently looking up Price Canyon for areas to store water, okay, and recycled water, so that, you know, in open pits, really. And we've already put in, we're putting in one now that a developer is putting in, which will take about 10 acre feet. But that's, you know, that's just nothing. We need a golf course up there or something to, you know, to pond this water. And we've been looking at that. So, but we have put in our first purple pipe up the underneath the railroad. It's going in underneath the railroad across from our sewer plant. Mm-hmm. And it's going up to this track, and it runs all the way up to the top of the highest hill that we have in that area, okay, which Rick Lowhead is running it up to Highland Street. And then it's gravity feed from there on down to Shumash Park and the rest of the parks, and mm-hmm. and could be picked up by Caltrans right there at the intersection of the freeway, because they're using potable water out of our system to water the you know Caltrans vegetation that they have along there, and they use quite a bit of potable water.
One of the problems I think we have here, we're looking for solutions, water solutions for the future, but we're basing everything on today's costs. The future, $8,000 an acre feet, it may be a very attractive figure there, because you may not have some of these other water resources and that. So I think that's one of the troubling deals. You may be turning down something that may be the answer to the future solution there, because you're basing it all on what you can get the other deal on today's cost there. And I think you somewhat you got to look with a carefully at the cost figure and not overlook the fact that you may not have some of these other resources in the future.
Right, and also too, as you know, as part of our study, we looked at the costs of these various options, but we certainly didn't close the door. You know, we concluded that we really need to keep looking at this in future years. You know, things always change, so it's certainly something that we need to continue assessing.
In your desalinization studies, when you look at the new requirements that they're coming out with PDES permit, and you just got those forms you have to fill out and submit and submit a report, have you felt the waters as to how you're going to come out as far as dumping the brine?
Yeah, well, we did, and we touched bases with Coastal Commission and the Regional Water Quality Control Board. So we did go through that scenario. We projected what the water quality was going to be. We have to take a look at the dilution factors as we go through the diffuser, the outfall. So it did look favorable, but we obviously still have, I mean, we didn't achieve getting a permit. We just, you know, kind of tested the water, so to speak. But certainly we felt it was something that was permittable.
Yeah. They developed any use for brine somewhere down the line? So.
I don't think we've found any good uses yet, or at least not that I'm aware of.
But that's one of the advantages of an existing outfall line. As you know, Coastal Commission is not very receptive to additional outfall lines. Yeah. And since we do have an existing outfall line, which would need to have water continuing to flow through it in order to keep it open so it wouldn't sand in out at the end, with the brine coming off of a desal project, it's still a lot less salty than the salt water that's there in the ocean. And so, therefore, it's still not creating a negative with this discharge.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, I had a question about water, if it will be used for ag use effluent. How much more treatment is required? Is it like the Tosco refinery type water?
Well, it's yes and no. Technically, we need to get it to the tertiary 2.2 bacteriological quality, like I had mentioned. Then from there, you need to look at the type of crop that you're going to be irrigating. Some are more sensitive to others to chlorides and salt content. So you have to take a careful look at the type of crop. And I think probably more importantly, you also have to have a pretty extensive outreach program. And you've got to get buy-in, you know, from farmers as well, and you know, for that matter, whether if it's a landscape type project as well, it takes a lot of outreach, but to get to your question, yes, we probably would need some form of additional treatment like reverse osmosis to enhance the quality. Some, you know, there are some more salt tolerant crops, but I think for the most part, the types of crops that folks are growing in the area, you know, be it produce or strawberries, things like that, they're pretty sensitive. So
yeah, we don't want salty water. And I guess I would like to know specifically the nuts and bolts of how you get the this water from here to our ag operations?
Right. Long pipelines.
Well, and yeah. Then is it basically going into the aquifer that we're pumping out of?
It could be. It could be direct delivery, but it could also be groundwater recharge and pumping.
Okay, so because the city of Arroyo Grande is pumping out of the same aquifer as well.
Right.
I guess if you could get the water up to a standard where the city of Arroyo Grande is comfortable to drink it, then we would certainly all be comfortable to put it on our crops too.
Right. And that's where if you were to look at a groundwater recharge scenario, you know, whether you're going to extract it back for potable use or ag use, probably with the quality that we have right now, we probably need to do some level of treatment to reduce salts, because you'll impact the whole basin, and that probably from the regional board standpoint and their basin plan policies and basin plan objectives would probably not fly. So you would probably need to do some form of treatment to enhance water quality before you even recharge. Yeah.
If you are able to substantially reduce the number of water softeners dumping into the system, would that solve that problem?
To some extent, yeah. I don't know to what degree.
I guess I'm left with an impression, and I'd like you to straighten me out where I go awry here in this back of the envelope look. It looks as though this project would generate water that is somewhat lower in quality than desal water would be.
Yes.
And that it would be very likely in $2008 dollars somewhere on the order of $6,000 to $8,000 an acre foot.
For yeah, something like that.
Many of those uses that I saw on the screen. So lower quality water, more expensive water, like at least twice, perhaps, than desal water at this point.
Yeah.
It's not a bad conclusion.
Yeah. You know, I was going to mention earlier, you know, another good example of a recycled water facility program here in the area is the city of San Luis Obispo, and they have a pretty extensive program throughout the area for turf irrigation, and I believe and I don't even know if it included the treatment plant at cost itself, because they upgraded their tertiary plant I believe in 93 or 95 thereabouts, so they already had a lot of their tertiary facilities in place over a decade ago. But I believe their cost per acre foot for their program was about $6,000 an acre foot for the city. And they also have a pretty extensive outreach program as well, because they're doing a lot of irrigation at the school district facilities.
I think Mr. Guthrie's got a question.
Yeah, first a comment on the tertiary. Both San Luis Obispo and the prison both have to treat the tertiary because they're using the creeks for the outfall. So to them, it's kind of secondary that they have tertiary water available, so it's kind of a different issue for them. The question I actually had, and maybe it's something that we look at in the future, is what is Monterey doing that makes their water usable for ag use? Maybe they just have a specific crop, but two, I'm going to assume they have to be paying it down to make it.
Diluting
the expense.
Paying
the cost of it to the farmer, because I can't imagine farmers paying
$8,000
an acre foot. So I'm just wondering if you have any idea. I mean, the obvious deal is we do have the ag uses. I think the ag uses very close to the plant.
Yeah.
If they would seem like the obvious user for a lot of water if we could make the price and the quality right. And here's somebody right next door is doing it. So
right. Yeah. And actually, I don't know the details of that, but I should know more probably next month. I'll be going to the water use conference in Monterey next month, and we're going to do a plant tour and actually tour some of the ag facilities there. So I'll probably come back with some better information that time. But I'm aside from the costs and who pays for the water, again, I know they have they've got a very extensive public outreach program, and it took a while I think to get all the farmers on board out there, but they're using, as I understand, almost all of their effluent from the plant, and this is for food crops, edible food crops. So
yeah. I know there's a city up north that's doing as well. They actually hold the water back until the price of water works for some reason at a certain time of year. Then they can sell the farmers all the water they want, and the rest of the year they can't. I know they have to have a very large storage facility to to meet that particular requirement. I don't know what it is in Monterey, but there has to be something, there has to be another shoe here, another fact that we don't know.
Mrs. Dean.
Well, I think it forced into it. And I think that was the thing that got them started on it. And we're not at that point. Fortunately, we're not at that point yet where we have to do that. And the cost for tertiary water, yeah, it's in great part a whole another pipeline you have to put in to get the water where you have to go. So it is going to be, you know, like double anything from DSL.
I think one of the things that has to bring the price down is the replacement of potable water, so that potable water can be either resold and used for drinking water in either new development or something of that nature. If you for example would have a housing development or something that was going to go in that's going to require another 50 homes or another, say, 25 acre feet of water. If you can pick that up by not using water on a park and take that potable water and then sell it basically to a new 25 homes within your development, you know, that offsets part of the cost. It increases the overall total of your saleable water, but it may be a way that you can respond to the housing requirements that are being set upon each city from the state as to try to reach a certain number of housing over the next 8 to 10 years.
Respond real quick. You still have to compete with new sources like.
Yeah, if you have the new sources,
yeah,
I know, I agree. But if you don't have the new sources to get additional water, it might be a means to do that.
All right, other questions for Mr. Tanaka? I see one in the audience. Please step up. Imagine Mr. Tanaka will step aside momentarily.
Marilee Hyman. Mr. Chairman and members of the Commission, I'd like to comment on the importance of the comfort level of the public in using recycled water. Because I'm a member of the RAC as District 3, I pay a lot of attention to water issues and articles that come out, and of course want to attend your meetings because you're so important in the South County for our water. Previously, when in the South County, in not our county, but in the LA area, when there was a time when they were ready to pull the plot to start recycle water, there was a chant that grew in the audience, and it stopped the project that was ready to go online. They spent a lot of money, a lot of time, and they used it. The chant was from toilet to tap, and it turned the public against that project. It halted it for quite some time. I believe there is a new kind of resistance. It may be based on the same kind of fear that started that original chant, which has been disproved, that there's no more bacterial level and recycled water is perfectly safe. Clean water, you'd like to be a test for checking out pharmaceuticals, do it, at least finding tests that are economically useful. Pismo Beach is a poster child test project right now for checking out DNA in ocean water, and the eyes of the nation are going to be on the results of that study. So maybe we could be on the cutting edge here. But I think it's something that, at a minimum, you'd want to pay attention to, especially if you start putting out a lot of money for recycled water and find out at the end, after you've got something going, that you have a resistance, good fear or not a good fear from the public that they won't use it. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Mr. Tanaka, or perhaps John, you could answer whether or not we're doing any significant level of testing for pharmaceuticals at this point.
Well, yeah, we are not at this point, and I do agree that it's something that needs to be looked at. And back in 2001, when we did the study, I don't think that term was even defined at that point in time. So, you know, things really change. That's why we constantly need to look forward, update regulations, and look at the viability of these types of projects. And we need to account for all of these factors that change over the years.
Thank you for that. Any other questions for Mr. Tanaka or anyone else in the audience? Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. I think we are to old business, plant upgrade update, Mr. Benedict.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Gary. Just a brief summary of where we are in the upgrade project for the two, I guess, visiting members. The upgrade project was finished in May of 2007. We've been going on about 13-14 months now with the new membrane system and the upgraded plant. The SRF loan, state revolving loan, that we received, we have approximately $1.4 million of the $26 million loan that has not been expended yet. Most of that has been obligated. About $200,000 of that money has been obligated. The balance of it I am using to finish up other retrofit and upgrade items that are related to the upgrade system that we had some problems with or didn't get fully completed as part of the SRF loan. The SRF loan is available to complete that work till the end of December of 2009. We should be done with these remaining items not too long after probably the first of the year. The two major items that we have are the Paul membrane contract. I believe we owe them something in the range of $500,000-$600,000. We've been operating the membrane system, as I said, for about 14-15 months. We'll be doing the Paul testing and hopefully resolve their final contract by the end of this calendar year. We owe Black & Veatch, the designer, a couple $100,000. We'll be finishing up their work and negotiating some problems that they had to be done. We're getting them done one at a time. I'm working with the technical advisory committee on those specific issues and keeping them abreast of what's going on. Nothing that I think I need to brief you on, some of the specifics that are going on beyond what I've done. So I'll just kind of leave it there, Mr. Gehring.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Benedict on the plant upgrade? Anybody? Nobody? Spillway Rays report.
I have in your packet, I did include, unfortunately, only the first three pages. In my attempt to keep from burying you with a lot of extraneous information, I didn't give you enough, so I do apologize for that. The Technical Advisory Committee has received a draft of the URS report, which is 5.1. We've discussed that a little bit. As you may have noticed, that's the fourth draft of that document that was provided. This draft of the document was expanded from the third draft to include some other representative facilities that were constructed, giving us relative cost per acre foot of water for desalination, for dam raising, and for other reservoir improvements. And unfortunately, that's not in your document. I think the total document's about 22, 24 pages. And again, I apologize for that. We're not finished with it yet. And unfortunately, I didn't include the next page, which was really the most important page. And I've got it up on the screen here, and I hope I can operate this. I'm going to try to get that fourth page on here. Let me start with the document that you do have. And again, for the two visiting members here, thank you. What we did is the concept was we wanted to evaluate what we could do to gain more storage in the Lopez Reservoir. And the idea was to put a couple of maneuverable gates on the spillway, and let me try to find those pictures for you. What these look like is across the front you see a what would be like a pillow bladder. What that bladder does, that bladder inflates and it raises the steel gate, which is basically creates the spillway. And the idea was that we could retrofit the Lopez Dam spillway with such an apparatus. So what we embarked on is doing a preliminary assessment of issues associated with that, both cost and volume, based on a raise of the spillway about 3 feet. The TAC requested that we evaluate that for a 4-foot and a 5-foot raise also. We determined the cost of it, the approximate schedule, how long it would take, any other significant issues as we do today. We had a restricted, secondarily, we had a restricted volume because during the dam we had to have a maximum restricted volume of it. And then when the HCP and the environmental releases kicked in as a requirement, we had a different storage volume because of the releases that we had. So the TAC had a good idea of having Stetson engineers, who is doing the HCP hydrology and water evaluation, do the technical assessment for how much safe yield we could actually count on, if you will. And in the document that you do have, on the second page, you have three scenarios, which basically is a safe yield scenario. The first one provides an additional safe yield of 916 acre feet to a minimum scenario over 2 years of 730 acre feet. Not to get in, there's a lot of details in this report, and that's one of the reasons I didn't provide it to you. But the cost associated with the facility, back here, I'm not sure, I guess you can read that second paragraph. The 3-foot raise, basically the acre footage, the cost per acre foot based on the three scenarios that I just mentioned, is $4,500 to $6,800 per acre foot, excuse me. That's the range based on a 3-foot raise. The total project cost is approximately $4.5 million. The third sentence under that first bullet shows that there's a 2,850 acre foot gross storage addition that we could count on. And I just bring that up because there's some other relative numbers that are shown in this report. The 2,850 acre foot capacity brings out a cost of $1,600 per acre foot of storage. And again, that's just gross storage. One of the things the TAC requested is that we look at other type of facilities that have been done recently. And we mentioned, Steve mentioned some of those today, and obviously give you some ballpark numbers. The ranges that this report was done by URS, and they have listed a couple of other similar type projects. New Reservoir Storage Dam, Highway 93 Dam, was an estimated total cost of $7,400 per acre foot. Dunes Dam in Denver was $1,500 per acre foot. We were talking about Monterey County just a little bit ago. They installed a very large desalination facility, and the cost, depending on their annual production, ranging from 5,300 to 10,000 acre feet, the cost is $2,400 an acre foot up to $2,000 an acre foot. There's another desal plant in Tampa Bay. This was extremely large. It was 28,000 acre foot per year, and you get a cost of $1,100 per acre foot. We don't have any 4-foot raise and a 5-foot raise. If you imagine that probably the environmental work, the soft costs of design, the cost of a gate that's 2 feet higher compared to a 3-foot gate is probably very, very minimal. However, a 4-foot gate would provide us about 30% more water based on the numbers that I gave you, and a 5-foot gate would provide us about 60% more water storage. The amounts range, we're really working with a range here of somewhere from 700 acre feet a year as safe yield up to about 1,300 acre feet per year yield. That's kind of the short story of this, and I intended on bringing this back to the TAC after we finished up a few more comments and finished up the report and bring it back to you, a recommendation from them whether they thought we should proceed on the project. The last thing I really want to say here is that they're on this, the estimated cost that you have above your 5-year schedule that is proposed shows some of the costs that comprise that $4.5 million project cost. There's a lot of soft costs involved here, as you can imagine, because there's a lot of environmental work, a lot of community work, a lot of design work. And so the soft costs are probably very skewed as far as a normal construction project. But the next step we would take, the last step we'll take in this particular portion of the initial feasibility assessment is to discuss with the Division of Dam Safety whether there's any fatal flaws associated with this. One of the good comments that one of the TAC members brought up was, well, when they built the dam, they figured out that the level of the water was going to be, I think, about 13 feet higher than the spillway. So we've already done that. Well, yeah, we did that maybe in 1959, but this is 2008, 2009. So the environmental issues have to be reassessed again because things are different now than they were before. So we have to go through the same process. It is a project, even though the dam is there. We have to assess whether structurally it's okay. To me, that would be a fatal flaw if we had to had issues associated with that, but I believe that something between a 3- and a 5-foot raise is not going to have any big impact on the structural integrity of the dam. But the next phase would probably be we'd have to go out to request for proposals for consultants to do some preliminary work and some environmental work to get this started if you wanted to proceed with that. I'll stop there and ask for questions.
Okay, thank you, Dean. Questions? Mr. Ewing.
Yeah, one of the things I'd like to know is we're looking at almost, what, 916 acre feet, something like that, or let's take some average between 7 and 13 or something like that. How much water are you going to be able to do with a desalinization plant? I mean, where is it best to spend the money? Is it best to spend the money, $4 million here, or spend $4 million in building a desalinization plant that could be permitted and service our needs?
Yeah, which is considerably more than $4 million that we're talking about here. And along with that, you just don't build it and it just stays there. There's an ongoing thousands of dollars in maintenance on an annual basis there. So if you don't have immediate need for that water, it can be costly to get it up and running there. And if you're not benefiting directly by it, I mean, how many years down the line before you finally hit the capacity where you need to draw upon it there? But the plant itself is not a cheap process. And now you got brought into the picture the Coastal Commission, as we've seen up there in Cambria and some of the communities up there. And whenever you get into the litigation and all that stuff going on, I got to believe the costs are even going to go higher there if that's the particular case here. But desal plants are not cheap. It's a means to an end.
Mr. Waltz?
I think part of the answer to Ted's question lies on who are the users for different kinds of projects here. And from the standpoint of recycled water, you could project that ag might be eventually a big user for desal. You could say that the municipalities and districts might be the potential user. For a project like this that we're talking about, which I think is a good project to look at, it has multiple users because the water would be stored behind the dam. And you could use that for potable supply. You could also use that for in-stream replenishment for habitat and so forth, however that turns out to be in our HCP. But a storage project to increase the storage capacity of the dam has some attractiveness to it because it has a lot of flexibility in the end user, whoever they might be, and how to spread that cost. But I agree. I think that, yeah, we do need to compare the cost of these different kinds of projects and really see what they turn out to be and who might be the buyer.
Mr. Daly, Mr. Guthrie?
I just had a quick comment that the other attraction here is the size of the project. I mean, we're really not, in Arroyo Grande, we're not looking at to build out needing a ton of water. We don't need the kind of water that we're talking about producing in a desal plant. So the attraction here is that is very few projects are going to develop 1,000 acre feet of water. They all want to develop, 200, 300 acre feet of water. So I think that's one of the attractions here is that even though it might be more expensive, as you mentioned, we won't need the other water till somewhere farther down the line, but we need 250 acre feet tomorrow. That's one of the attractions.
I guess from my perspective, and just doing some kind of back of the envelope calculations, I mean, we're looking at a $5 million project in round numbers that's going to develop in round numbers 1,000 acre feet. That's $500 an acre foot in capital costs in round numbers, back of the envelope calculation. So it's a very, very attractive project from a cost point of view in terms of the final cost of the project. Mm-hmm. And it's in terms of the timing, it's about 5 years from start to finish. Mm-hmm. So it perhaps is a little bit faster than the diesel project. That idea back to the TAC and see if the TAC thinks it's a good idea. And if so, it could come back to this committee for approval of that level of further investigation, which could go in parallel to the diesel project. So.
There's only one other thing, and that's if we're in a very long cycle of dry spell, we haven't filled that dam since 92. And if we've got to have the water coming in to fill this dam another 3 feet to get another 1,000 acre feet, and if you build it and it doesn't come, we're gonna have egg all over our face. Okay, I happen to be one that believes that we'll get another wet cycle. Okay, that this is probably a temporary situation, and if it takes 5 years to build it, probably building it in a dry cycle might be the best thing, so we're ready when it does rain. But there's no guarantees of that.
There's one thing since Mr. Arians brought that up, and unfortunately, the committee as a whole does not have the whole Stetson. And if the committee did have, let me just put this up. Let's see if this can.
Is that this document? Bunch of stuff right here.
Let's see.
You set it right here. We can put it on this.
I was just going to ask. Does anyone know where the cycle is on the desal plant? Is it in a similar phase?
The final report is just being completed.
And by the final report, is it similar to this final report, or is it the staff, the conceptual?
No, it's a final report.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's farther.
It's a little further along in terms of that, but I think where this is going is that the next step would be a study by Stetson or URS or somebody to finish off some of the preliminary conclusions that have been reached here, as well as to check out the stability of the dam with DSOD, figure out where we were with those guys.
This diagram that's up on the screen may not, at first blush, make a lot of sense to the committee members, but what you're looking at is the water level in Lopez Dam over the history of the dam. And you see the very first line that goes straight up. That's in 1969. The dam filled in 1 year in 1969, and it spilled. And if you look at the peaks at the top, every time that curve hits a peak at the top, it would be spilling over the spillway. And counting those up, you'll find that there are 16 times over the life of the dam that it would have spilled or did spill. And in the case here, that upper line is a 5-foot rise, would be a 5-foot gate. And we would have utilized that 5-foot gate in every one of those instances. So there's at least preliminary evidence in the Stetson report that would seem to say that it's a good idea to look further into.
Can you get that report online?
I think Mr. Benedix could make sure we could get it online.
Yes, I can put it online.
Can I just ask a real quick Mr.
question? Mr.
Is this saying then that it spilled in 2004 at the current level? Because I didn't know that we have...
The firm of Stetson calculated.
Yeah, it's based on actual rainfall. It's a simulation.
What kind of habitat releases did this assume? Do we know?
It was based on the current habitat releases of 4380, I believe.
Jim.
Mr. Ashton.
If I understood correctly, I know we've been throwing some figures about it, but isn't it, aren't you supposed to capture 1,000 acre feet per foot? And if we raise it 3 feet, we'd get something like 3,000 acre feet additional. I thought you brought that up at one of the previous meetings.
That's
I heard a lot of people mentioning only 1,000, but I thought we said it was 1,000 per foot.
You're roughly correct, but what happens is just because you store 3,000 acre feet doesn't mean you get to safely extract that amount every year. If you store 3,000 acre feet, you may be able to safely extract only 1,000 of that every year in addition to the normal yield.
Because it averages out over...
So what you're saying is that you'll have more capacity there, but you can only draw so much up to be safely using that.
Now, let me add one thing, Mr. Gehring. It's important to point out, as we're going to talk about the HCP, but in considering this, it's important to understand that the HCP is, as you know, probably several years, if we're lucky, away from being approved. If we embark on this project in any certainty with respects to permitting, it's going to have major impact on the existing HCP that we have right now. And I just need to throw that caution out there because it's a big concern that could basically halt the HCP and require us to not go back to ground zero, but go back pretty close to ground zero. And that's a consideration that the advisory committee and the TAC needs to make sure that they understand or we address at some point. We don't want to address this and throw it into the mix without it being a serious option. It'd be nice to be able to get the HCP approved and then modify it with the dam with the spillway raise project. Just a comment.
Well, thank you. I think that is important. As a remark on that, the URS timing for this project shows permitting starting in about 2 years from inception. So, of course, that could be modified if we need to.
Dean, has staff discussed this concept with DSOD yet?
No, we have not, John.
Has URS discussed it with them?
No, they haven't got. That's the last thing they have to do in finishing up this report. Or we may not even have them do that as a product of this. It's something I want to bring back to the TAC next month and ask if they want to embark on that. It would be probably 1-2 hour meeting with DSOD.
Well, it seems worthwhile to have them do that because they're the guys that are going to say whether or not we can structurally add this type of facility onto the dam. So I think it sure would be worthwhile to even have URS have that meeting before we have the TAC meeting, so we'll have that information available to us.
Okay.
Our next TAC meeting is
October 3rd.
3rd?
Yeah.
Can we see if we can make progress before
I will
then?
Talk to URS and see if I can get that done. More water than we release, and therefore our permit doesn't allow that. If we were to go back and store even more water, it's going to open the whole issue up again about how much you're storing, how often you're going to release it, what are the environmental releases, are you changing again dramatically or even incrementally the inflow and the outflow capabilities to the creek from the dam and then beyond the dam downstream. So we don't know what the issues are. The problem is, I'm just bringing it up because somebody's going to say, stop, whoa, you guys are doing something different now than you proposed. You're going to operate it differently now than you proposed, and we need to reevaluate the HCP. And we can't really say much about that unless we come up with a strategy that says this is all consistent. But, you know, at least it's, if nothing, it's going to put the brakes on the HCP.
So, Mr. Benedix, we're going to take this back to TAC and perhaps get a recommendation out of them to move
yes.
forward.
Yes.
At the October 3rd meeting, perhaps.
Yes, that's correct.
And then we'll also get this report.
Yes.
Report.
Yes, and what I would hope to do is a lot of the data in here, make it all available to you, but come up with a summary of costs of other facilities, volumes, you know, that type of thing, so it's easy for you to understand. Easy for me to understand, too.
Any other questions or comments on this item? It looks like we're to the quagga mussel infestation response plan.
Yes, in your packet, you will see attachment 4-1. That was provided by the County Parks and Rec Department as far as the number of boats that entered Lopez Lake and the number of boats that were inspected for June, July, and August. 4,600 boats were inspected, 4,500 were decontaminated. We have a returning tag program, meaning that when the boats left, they were tagged. If they come back with that same tag intact, they don't have to decontaminate the boats. And 69 boats total were rejected, and the reasons for rejection. I just put that in there. The Water Resources Advisory Committee has also requested this information. They're very concerned about Salinas, the Salinas Dam, in Santa Margarita, the Lopez Dam, and also the Nacimiento and San Antonio dams. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But as far as the program goes, the Board of Supervisors was briefed on the quagga mussel issue. At this point, the county has written a letter to Monterey County requesting that they do something at Lake Nacimiento. Monterey County has advised us that they want staff to meet to go over the issue and decide what can be done, what ideas we have. Monterey County is not doing much beyond a public information program at Lake Nacimiento. So they have advised me that they don't have any technology program on what we should do to follow up as far as chemical treatment, chemical decontamination, physical decontamination, and where to do some follow-up on those. There's some technology that's we understand is evolving in the Western United States to try to address this because it's obviously infiltrated in the last year or so. We're not going to do a lot of detailed assessment, but we want to have a plan, I guess. I would sort of compare it to the Rio Grande Creek Lopez Dam inundation plan or the flood plan that we have. It's sort of an emergency plan. If we end up finding the mussels in either lake, we would follow this plan as far as doing future things of buying screens, planning on replacing things, do more detailed assessments as far as infrastructure to kill the mussels if we can do that. Technology's there. But we're not going to spend a lot of time going back. There's a lot of things that aren't known about the mussels, issues about what they do to the creeks, because we have outflows, obviously, in both the creeks that we release water to. And so we want to evaluate that so we know where to go if we see them. So I'm doing that, and I hopefully we'll have that contract underway in the next couple of months and have a draft of it by next summer. There's nothing we really can do beyond what we're doing now to decontaminate the boats. We haven't had any, I guess it would be obvious, we haven't found any mussels in the lake. We're not doing any larva testing for the veligers, which are the microorganisms that are in the young stage, because it takes several months to do testing to find out that they're there, and once they're there, there's nothing we can do about them anyway, other than drain the lake or kill everything in the lake, and we're not going to do either of those two things. So we want to be ready to go, and that's what the infestation response plan will be is geared to do. So as we get into that, I'll bring that back to you, and we have something that sort of tells you where we are, but that's kind of a summary of the response plan that we're working on.
All right, questions? Mr. Ashton.
It's my understanding, since this is a statewide problem, but the burden the state put upon our county to take care of our own problem there, that they're not getting involved. And yet, if when you read the paper there, the state is getting involved in areas like Tahoe. I guess it's a bigger attraction to the tourists and that, so they're more willing to spend state money up here and let us take care of our problem. Has anybody also checked any of the other areas where we do have infestation, like in San Diego? And I believe they have the one reservoir up in north of us here. Has that increased at all, what's going on with those other areas there? Or are they pretty well confined the infestations to those areas?
Well, we haven't seen any large reactionary programs or big expenses from the rivers or the reservoirs that have been infested. We haven't seen that yet. I don't know how long it takes to develop that. We haven't seen anybody come up with, you know, we're having to do this because of the mussels themselves do change the water quality in the reservoirs or the rivers depending on how big they are, what the flows are. We don't know what those really are either. So I guess, but it's kind of our reservoir, and it's going to be our problem if they're there. So I don't have any more information than that.
Thank you.
Mr. Erie.
Is there any kind of a communication system that's going on within the state or out of the state? You know, like I guess it went down to Lake Mead, and is it spread out of there? I mean, do we know anything about what's happened?
Yeah, we know that it's gone all the way down to almost all the San Diego reservoirs that are fed by the state water system, Colorado River system. LA Municipal has them in some of their systems, and you know they're the largest purveyor probably on the West Coast. There's a lot of reports and studies, but I haven't seen any analysis of what it's going to cost, what we're doing, big infestation problems at this point. So the program is really the state Fish and Game and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, mostly the state Fish and Game. They're sort of the clearinghouse. They're doing parallel testing, and basically right now they're just sort of plotting where they are and providing educational services or testing services to other reservoirs, and that's about all. We internally, between us and Monterey County and the city of San Luis Obispo, have a tabulation of the testing dates, the locations that we have, and we have actually triple redundancy on where we are doing tests. For the county facilities and Lake Nacimiento, and I believe Lake San Antonio also. But as far as a larger clearinghouse, we really have no reason to. I mean, we know they're in Lake Mead. I'm not sure the closest lake that they've been in Nacimiento, but we are concerned that Nacimiento is so accessible to so many different people that somebody's going to come from Lake Havasu or Colorado River and bring one of them with them, and then that lake is infested.
Mr. Ashton.
The one north up there, I believe there's a reservoir in the Hollister area that it got contaminated, and they can't figure that one out because I don't think it allows motorized boats on it other than canoes and that. So that's the one that we have directly north of us.
One of the things that's kind of strange about this is that is how they go. We're trying to minimize the boat issues like birds and rocks that they carry and, you know, mollusks that they pull out of one lake and fly to another. You know, that's, we haven't got that far into that amount of detail. Like, we're taking the largest approach that we can, but I haven't heard any very extremely unusual issues of, you know, people bringing waterborne whatever and dumping in one lake versus another, so we're trying to restrict that.
Mr. Talley, Mr. Guthrie. Anybody in the audience with a comment, question? Seeing none, on to HCP processing status.
I can give you a very brief process or update on that because Mr. Anthony Spina, who is reviewing the documents, has been on vacation for about 5 weeks, and he is back and has assured us that it is one of his top priority projects. Said that National Marine Fisheries Service review that entire document and give us comments on the entire document so we can move the thing forward. That was a response that they advised us of in response to a letter that we sent them complaining about the time and money that we have spent in trying to process this. So that's the short story, that we should get something back and move this along.
All right, thank you. Comments, questions? Are we going to wring their hands?
5 weeks.
That's a long vacation. I don't get vacations that long. All right, now we'll get Mr. Talley animated. Agricultural water use strategy discussion plan.
Yes. In response to several comments from several meetings of various agencies regarding the environmental releases, particularly Mr. Ehring brought up at the, I think, the last advisory committee meeting, issues associated with the environmental releases and how they relate directly to the farmer's use of the water or extraction of the water from the creek or from the groundwater area. We're attempting right now to develop a strategy to work with the farmers to come up with an understanding. I won't go as far to say it's an agreement, but at least an understanding of that there are limits on the extraction or the release abilities that we have from the dam. We have a 4,200 acre foot, I was going to call it a guideline. I'm not sure what it is. It's not a contract volume. It is stated in the contracts as a sort of a guideline flow that we release for environmental purposes, and that includes groundwater recharge, it includes fisheries, it includes agriculture. It's not specifically stated in there which is which. Because of some concerns regarding the interpretation or the legality or the actual operation of the farmer's extraction of the water in whatever form they do that, and the expansion or contraction or operation of the farmer's crops, rotations, number, et cetera, what we're going to do is come up with a sort of a summary factual document that will indicate what the water releases from the dam have been about 7 to 10 years before the HCP was instituted. And that would probably be somewhere around the time frame that we had to start making environmental releases. Show the details of what releases have been since that time, month by month, and come up with some kind of an understanding of what those releases relate to as far as currently. I didn't mention this before, but we have our releases now are about 4.5 million gallons per day. I believe at the last meeting I noted that we were about 6 million gallons per day for releases. And I also summarized that when some of the farmers call and they're having difficulty extracting from the creek, that we have increased the releases about 0.5 million gallon per day increments, and then we release them back down when the weather gets cooler or there's less pumping or less pressure. After they evaluate information, come up with an approach to strategy, that we would also sit down with a farmer's representative or group and sort of go through their issues too and attempt to come up with some type of an understanding of what we can provide and we can't provide, and what's going on in the farming industry, the operation there in the valley. It was interesting to note on Steve's presentation, I noticed that they showed significantly less agriculture in 1995 than 2005. I don't know if you saw that. That seems strange to me because, I don't know, Brian, maybe you know if there's more or less. One of the comments from some of the committee members was maybe we should go out and do an agricultural usage survey or something, and I kind of related that to counting people's cattle on their ranch. I'm not sure we want to do that. I don't want to do that, but the idea was that we want to get the data down, sit down, and try to reach an understanding with everybody about, we have certain specifics for fish releases. We know what those are. And we don't want the farmers to go to be planning on something. The worst thing to say, hey, guess what? We reached the maximum, and you just planted something, and we can't release any more water, and we're in a predicament. We don't want that to happen. And there's other peripheral things about what's the legality of that. I'm not sure we really need to get into that. Maybe we will discuss it. But we wanted to approach it with all entities interested, involved, and represented, so we could come up with something maybe similar to a gentleman's agreement that the agencies have right now to use groundwater. I think maybe that's the goal.
Well, I mean, you know, that certainly sounds very, very reasonable to me. I mean, well, it was interesting. When I saw that this was on the agenda and had been discussed in the last meeting, I was going to make it a point to call Tom and talk to him. I certainly don't have a complete understanding of, you know, the history of the gentleman's agreement. You know, Tom Runnels is really the guy that I think can speak to that. But, you know, from my standpoint, we're certainly willing to sit down and you know, look at what you guys come up with. One thing in general I can say, though, is that our use of water in the Arroyo Grande Valley is much more efficient than it was historically. And it surprises me that there's anybody that would be calling to say that they can't, you know, that they're having a problem extracting water out of the creek. For one thing, certainly in our operation, with the exception of one rental property that we have, we do not pump water out of the creek anymore. And since we've converted almost all of our irrigation to drip irrigation, our use of water is much, much more efficient than it was before. So, you know, that's what I can say right now. You know, we'll just look and see what folks come up with. You know, one thing about farmers is no matter who we might decide is the person that might be speaking for farmers, there are some of them that could have a very distinctly different opinion about, you know, what the county comes up with. And, you know, you might hear from them. Willing to fulfill that role, and you know, I would get a lot more up to speed on, you know, what the history of the agreement's been, as well as, you know, talk to other people and see what they're thinking in our industry.
We hope to help with that, to give you the background data and the documents that we do have for that. So I just found out today from talking to the former utilities manager Christine Ferrara that there was some research done, I think, John, in response to your question about the 4,200 acre foot, where that came from. Apparently that was looked at 10 or 12 years ago. We still haven't found that. Doug is looking into that, and we want to bring that as part of the basic information back to TAC so we can get started on this.
Anybody else? Questions, comments?
I have a comment. Is this on? And I would like to commend you, Dean, on pushing this thing forward, going out to the TAC and trying to get all this data. And I think that's the thing that we, basically what I had in mind, is that we can research this, get the data, and take a look at it. And if we can't come to some agreement with the farmers, I'm very glad to hear that the Tally farms are not taking, extracting water directly out of the creek.
Except for one spot.
And what you all are doing now, I think, is exactly what we need to do. We need to know the situation and sit down with the farmers and see if we can't come up with a gentleman's agreement.
Anybody else? Any other comments? How about the audience? Anybody? Mr. Guthrie, you happy?
Everybody's happy.
All right, committee member comments, and why don't we start with almost committee member, Mr. Guthrie.
Yeah, all right. I have no additional comments about what's taking place. I guess we'll relate this back to our regular representatives.
Mr. Talley.
No comment.
By the way, thank you for your willingness to work with us, and we're going to get it together.
All right.
Mr. Benedix, I did have one. I seem to have missed the Kennedy Jenks audit. Where are we on that?
The final Kennedy Jenks audit was completed. I believe I brought their primary recommendation summary to the TAC in August. If you'd like, I can also put that full document online. There's a lot of backup to each of those issues. If you'd like to do that, or just mail it to each of the TAC committee members, your pleasure if some of the other members would like to see that.
Yeah. I just had it in my notes that it was coming to us this month, but if it wasn't quite ready, it could be emailed or mailed. What's the consensus of the group?
I'd like to see it.
Yeah. All right. So mail it out, I suppose, and email it as appropriate.
Okay.
Mr. Wallace?
I just think committing Dean and some of the things that he's exploring besides just, the Zone 3 project, thinking of just the Lopez Dam, we're starting to look at a lot of other water alternatives and water issues that relate all to the water usage in the South County area, and I think that's appropriate.
And it's going to just be a drip, 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 and there won't be any water there. And I think in the long term, as far as we're concerned, I think water is going to be a more valuable or more precious resource than the fuel is. I think we'll find ways eventually to get around the high fuel costs and that, but if you run out of water, you're in deep trouble here. So I think we need to keep bodies like this to keep going forward if we're going to maintain our living over here on the Central Coast.
Thank you for that. And Mrs. Dean, anything? And Mr. Earing, anything?
No, I haven't.
Anybody in the audience have anything they'd like to add? All right. The next regular meeting is scheduled for Thursday, November 20th, and we are adjourned.
The maker foot of gasoline was about $1.2 million.
From a gas and maybe had like right. No cost.
No, that's okay. It's, I,
it's, you get that.